Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast, brought to you by City Current and powered by Lipscomb and Pitts Insurance. This show shares personal stories and insight from those who are giving back and making a difference so we can learn and do the same. We cover life lessons, business advice, passion, and purpose. Now here's our host, Jeremy Park.
Welcome to the Changemakers Podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Park. We are coming today from Nashville. So this is our first extension into Nashville. We're super excited with City Current to be extending into Nashville. So we are honored. We're excited. The whole nine yards to be here. We have our first Nashvillian, we'll say, Nashville podcast here coming out of the Nashville office. But we have Jason Duncan. He is the president and CEO of Energy Lighting Services. How are you doing, Jason?
I'm great. It's a beautiful day in Nashville. We're waiting for spring to finally arrive, and it looks like it's getting here.
So I have to figure out, though, so is it Nashvillians, what's the technical phrase, or is there
unicorns.
One?
No Nashvillians exist. Everybody's from somewhere else, but Nashvillian is the phrase, yes.
See, I got to learn all these things. That's good. All right, so let's start. The fun of Changemakers is that we get to talk a lot about the personal side. Your faith, your family, the whole nine yards. I know those are two extremely important topics for you personally, and we'll definitely talk about the business as well. But give us a little bit of background on just where you grew up.
Well, I'm one of the unicorns. I'm actually from the area. I grew up in Sumner County, which is a county just north of Nashville. And my wife is from East Nashville. So when we tell people we're actually from here, they can't believe it because everybody we know is from somewhere else. Some of our best friends are from California, Michigan, Colorado. Nobody's from here. But grew up in White House, Tennessee, a little town of about 4,000 people. Now it's about 10,000 people. I've lived in Gallatin, which is the county seat of Sumner County, for the last 15 years. Heavily involved in the community there. I've been on the board for the Chamber of Commerce in Gallatin. We're members of the Hendersonville Chamber, Nashville, Donelson, Franklin, Williamson. We've been involved in all the chambers for quite some time. Nashville's home. I've lived in a lot of different places, but I always kept coming back to Nashville.
So is your family still here and your wife's family? Mm-hmm. And so fairly large roots here?
Yep. My mom and dad still live in the house that they moved into that house when I was a senior in high school. So they're still there, still in the same town. My mom grew up, she went to White House High School, as did I, so second generation, same town. So yeah, and my wife's mom is still here, and she lives in Madison, so we're all here.
Nice. Give me one family tradition, so something that sticks out. It could be around a holiday or just, you know, going over there on the weekends and special meal. What sticks out to you in terms of growing up here and the focus on family?
Well, every Thanksgiving, on Thanksgiving morning, my mom's side of the family gets together and does a big country ham breakfast. And the people that are not from here don't know what country ham is, but it's really fantastic. If you've never had country ham, you should go to Cracker Barrel and order some. but we have a big country ham breakfast, and the whole family comes over 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and they stay all day long until, you know, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, depending on when the football games are over. And,
yep.
And it's just one of my favorite family traditions.
So with Thanksgiving, is there a favorite football game, like the Cowboys or the Detroit Lions?
I guess we just put it on, and you know, whatever's on, we kind of watch it and just, you know, while we're eating.
It's
a break from eating. So we eat all day long and then watch a little football and we play some cards and we eat and we watch football and play some cards.
Hey, that's a great day.
Yeah.
So how large of a family? Brothers, sisters, how big is your family?
I have one younger brother who actually lives in Atlanta, and my wife has one older sister who lives here here locally as well. So we only have one sibling, but my wife's both her parents had like 9 siblings each, so she has a pretty large family, and they're all fairly local to Middle Tennessee. And then my dad has a brother who's here locally, and then my mom has two brothers that live locally, so everybody's pretty much here.
So before you got into the business side, ministry and teaching were big parts of your past. How was that, because of your family or just a personal calling on your end? Share a little of that side.
Well, when I was in high school, I really thought that I was going to end up designing cars for a living. I was big into art, and I wanted to go to art school. Got accepted to some art schools, but somewhere along the line, junior, senior year, I felt what you would call a calling to go into ministry, and ended up going into to Bible college, went to school, got a degree, Bible degree. Bachelor's degree in ministry, actually. Spent 13 years doing ministry, and bivocationally, I also do sales. So I sold, you know, insurance or cell phones or whatever just to kind of make some money. And then beyond that, when I kind of got done with ministry, I got to the point where I was really not happy with the way things were going in ministry. I didn't feel like I was making the difference I needed to make. So I went back to school, got a master's in education, spent 4 years teaching school, best thing I'd ever done. And then, of course, I'm sure you're going to ask me, well, how did you go from teaching school to running a
Well, from ministry to teaching, I mean, you know, lighting company is a natural progression, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, share a little bit of the story. Yeah, go ahead.
So the story goes like this. So in about 2010, a friend of mine came to me and said he had this idea for a hydrogen generator, and he wanted to go into business with me, and we could build this thing and you know, be a side business. And I loved teaching. I taught 8th grade American history, and I was making a difference in these kids' lives. I was a good influence, was able to talk to kids, you know, outside of class. And it was just, it was great. And I told my friend, I said, I don't want to do it because I don't want to jeopardize my career, because I'm going to go into administration. I went back and got my administrator's license. And he said, well, we can just do this part-time. So we ended up putting together the company. The company started as Future Vision Energy, which is still now our LLC. We operate under Energy Lighting Services as a brand name now. But we started the company. We did that for about a year, trying to design this hydrogen generator, which actually worked. It didn't work as well as we wanted, but it worked. But the following spring, in early 2011, my principal came to me and said that he was going to have to eliminate two teaching positions in the building. I was the last guy hired in the building, didn't have tenure, and so even though I had the highest test scores in the county in my subject level, subject matter, it didn't matter. It was,
wow.
It was one of those deals where, you know, last in, first out. So it left me having to make a pretty critical decision. So I looked at our business model that we had built with Future Vision Energy and decided, okay, that's not going to work. Hydrogen and ethanol isn't going to work, but for whatever reason, I don't even remember how it came about, but LED lighting came across my brain. I thought, well, I bet that would work. I know how to sell, so if I could sell this idea of retrofitting large commercial buildings with LEDs, saving the money, we could probably do it. Well, my original business partner didn't think that was going to be a good idea, so we separated. I kept the LLC, and then I went back to the guy that I had met and asked for $5,000 to get the company started to begin with. His name is Mike, who's now my current business partner and senior vice president. And I said, Mike, I'm not asking for any more money, but I would like a partner, and here's my new plan. And he thought the new plan was a good idea, so we went, you know, we decided to do that. So we pivoted the company, and within about 6 months, we had a multi-million-dollar contract with a hospital.
Wow.
And we did four of the world's largest LED retrofits over the next couple of years, and the company just took off. And now I know a lot more about lighting than I ever thought I would ever.
Wasn't there a moment, though, where it was a promise or a prayer with your wife where she kind of gave you an ultimatum, and luckily things came through before the ultimatum?
Yeah, I'm glad you remember that, because what happened was my last check from the state was August the 15th and of that year of 2011. And I told the deal I'd made with my wife, I said, if I don't get a contract, something doesn't happen by that date, I'll go work at Lowe's or Starbucks. I'll do, you know, whatever I've got to do, get a real job. And on August the 12th, we got that contract with the hospital.
Wow.
So that was a fun ride down the elevator back to the car.
And that's not just like a small contract. It was like a $3 million contract,
well,
right?
It was a big contract. It was over $1 million.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, that's there's no walk before you run. It's like, let's just jump in full throttle and go.
And the great story there, I'll tell this story. So we're in the conference room with the vice president of facilities, the CFO, and the lead engineer for that facility. And it was Mike and me on one side of the table and these three gentlemen on the other side. And it was a huge conference room table, and I had an 11-inch white MacBook. And I didn't even have it hooked up to a screen, and I was clicking it with my finger. I didn't even have a clicker. And that was the way we were presenting this plan to this hospital that was going to be a couple $1 million. And he stopped me, the VP stopped me halfway through, and he said, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. He goes, has anybody ever told you no? And I said, well, no, they haven't. What I didn't tell him is I'd never asked anybody before.
You got to ask the right question.
That's right. So I said, no. They haven't. And then he said, well, why wouldn't I do this? And I said, well, I don't know. Why wouldn't you do it? And he looked down the table at the CFO, who knew my business partner, Mike. They had worked together in the past. He said, do you trust these guys? And the CFO said, well, I trust him, meaning my partner Mike.
Right,
and if
right.
Mike trusts Jason, yes, I trust him. He turned back to me, looked at me for a moment, and he looked back at the CFO and said, write the man a check.
Wow.
That's how it started.
That's a good story. That's so, so, I mean, you kind of mentioned a little bit, but share where you are today. I mean, talk about some of the projects and just, you know, the fact that you've grown tremendously.
Yeah, we've grown. The last 2 years have been our really explosion years. You know, we spent the first, I guess, 2 years, we didn't have any employees, and we were just doing, I was doing everything myself. I was doing all the audits, all the sales, all the sourcing, managing the installations, hiring the subcontractors. And today we've got 27 employees. We're still hiring. We'd like to hire a lot, you know, somewhere around 8 to 10 more installers. We've got a fairly nice office in Hendersonville, Tennessee, and you know, our reach now, we're doing business in currently in Wisconsin, Indiana, New York, Maryland, Kansas, and Tennessee. So we're all over. We've done projects as far west as Wyoming.
Wow.
We've helped on some projects in Canada. So it's been unbelievable to think that I was a school teacher, you know, 10 years ago, and now here I am running this company, and so many lives are being affected by the decisions that were made so long ago that we didn't. I was just trying to live and survive, and now I've got 27 people that are living and surviving because of that decision.
Well, that's what I was going to say too. Is it's, you know, you talk about making a difference in the lives of youth, being a teacher or through ministry, and you know, sharing your faith. And now in a different way, you are making a huge impact in not only the individuals on your team, but their families as well.
Yeah, I've got a good friend of mine who, it was a couple of years ago, I was commiserating over, I was just having a really bad run. I mean, things were not going well. Yeah, ups and downs of businesses, and I was in a down. I was in that valley. And I was commiserating with him and saying, look, you know, I'm not making a difference. I need to go do something that I'm making a difference. And he challenged me, said, you are making a difference. Look at the employees. I mean, these people that work for you now have income. They can pay their mortgages. They can buy groceries. They can go on vacation. They can buy new cars because you're providing the opportunity for them to have a job. And I had not thought about that before, I guess because I was selfish, thinking, well, I'm just doing this because I got to survive, when in fact, as a byproduct of that, I've got, you know, my employees are able to not just survive, but are fulfilled and are thriving. And so it really changed my perspective. And today, I mean, we just hired another guy started yesterday. And, you know, I'm not even meeting the new employees until they are already here, and where before I was hiring everybody. So there was a new guy in the office. So, hey, my name's Jason. Who are you? And I get to meet, and I sit down and I think about it when I go back to my office, like, well, there's another person that, you know, our company's able to help. And I know that that's a weird way to think about them having a job, but it is. It's a way to help them. And they're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart. They're doing it to get paid. And they're helping build our company and help our customers.
Well, and I think even on your end, there's a difference where you're working in the business. As you said at the very first, you're doing everything mm-hmm. because you have to get it done. And now you're able to step back and you've got the right people in the right positions. And now you're working on the business.
That's right.
And so now it takes on an exponential growth opportunity because you're able to shepherd and do the things and make the decisions. But now they have greater impact, but you're working on the business versus directly in the business.
Exactly.
And I think that's a big difference, especially as a CEO. Mm-hmm. Share with us a little bit of on your end of just what are you looking at? I mean, talk about trends in lighting. And when you're looking at working on the business, what are the things that you're looking at, not just for today and tomorrow, but like 2 or 3 years out? I know technology obviously rapidly changes, but what are the things that you have your eye on?
Well, what my director of project planning just got back from a trip to China to visit some of the manufacturers that we work with, and it was a very, very productive trip. And lighting all comes down to lumens per watt. That's the efficiency. So how much lumens, which is the amount of light, the visible light, how many lumens can you get per watt? You know, we're all used to measuring light by wattage. You know, was it a 60-watt bulb or is it a 100-watt bulb? And we know the higher the wattage, the brighter the light is. But in fact, today you measure it quite differently. So it's really the efficiency of a light is how many lumens you're getting out by that watt. That watt is a measurement of power, not a measurement of light. So now we can, where we used to be at 80 lumens per watt, 90 lumens per watt, 100 lumens per watt, and we were creeping up, where old technology was at, you know, less than 20 lumens per watt. Well, now he just got back from China and met some new manufacturers, looked at some new products, and we're going to Light Fair, which is an international lighting show in Chicago next month, and we're going to meet some more manufacturers. But now we're at 175 lumens per watt.
Wow.
And it's pushing upwards and upwards. It's going to continue to go, and who knows where the ceiling is going to be. But what you could do before with 80 lumens per watt, now you can do half the wattage with 175 lumens per watt. So you've reduced your energy consumption by half the same amount of light. And the light lasts essentially forever. I mean, obviously there are more, it's more technical than that, but.
Sure, and I'm looking ahead, but I'm assuming that's a cost saving then for the company, and that's,
Our prices have gone down just in sourcing product. Our prices have gone down about 50% since we started.
Wow.
And that's significant. And then the efficiency have gone up hundreds of percent. So that's just like anything else. Back when flat panel televisions came out, I guess it was about, 15 years ago or however long that was, you know, those televisions were $10,000. And they weren't very good as compared to today's standards. Well, now you can buy the same type of television for $700, and it's tremendously better. So that's kind of where lighting is. Lighting is a technology. It's not, it is a commodity in many ways, but it is a technology that can use to do so many things. And that technology is getting better and more efficient, and also is getting cheaper.
See, that was so good. You got our producer Andrew even saying "wow" out loud. That was good. He was so impressed. Normally, he's over there silent. He's like, "Wow." Let's switch over and talk about for you. I know that family obviously is extremely important. You talk about the roots here, but you know, for you and your children being heavily involved, I know that faith still plays an integral role as well. Share a little bit about just when you talk about kind of the philanthropy, the giving back side, the mentoring, the guidance. Share a little bit about just kind of the overlap of between Scouts and faith and family, how that plays a role.
Well, faith has always been a part of my life. I mean, I've followed Jesus ever since I can remember. So I don't remember a time when I didn't know who Jesus was and following him. And that obviously was a big part of me going into ministry to begin with. And when I left formal institutional ministry back in 2006, I wasn't done with my faith. I wasn't done with Jesus. I was just really done with what I could refer to as the machine. It was just spitting, you know, chewing people up and spitting them out. And that's not a fair assessment of the entire Christianity, but that was my experience. And so I wanted to find and figure out a way to incorporate normal life and faith together in a way that wasn't weird. And a lot of times, and I don't mean any disrespect to any pastors, because I still am one to a certain degree, but I mean, a lot of pastors, you know, they don't live a normal life. They're in a bubble, and what they do and how they act and the way they live. And so I wanted to figure out, well, how do I incorporate what I'm doing as a CEO of a small growing company, my life as a follower of Jesus, and at pastoring a small house church? How do I make that normal and not weird? And I don't know that I figured that out, but I'm trying, right? So one of the things that I've been blessed to be able to do is the Boy Scouts have a big camp here in Middle Tennessee called Boxwell, and they reached out to me. I guess it's been almost 10 years ago, 8 or 9 years ago maybe, and asked me to come and speak and be their chaplain during their summer camp program. And so I go out there, and for the most part, I just lead their chapel program. But there have been times we had a scout pass away, and I went out there and was able to counsel with the troop, and they were obviously very devastated. Go out there and do their winter camps, and that's been fun because I was a scout as a kid. My son was a scout, and so that's I like doing that. And then I referred to our house church. We have a small house church that, you know, we've got, I don't know, 20 to 40 people. I don't know what the numbers are, but they're just in our county. We just meet in different homes across the county, and then once a month we all get together at one location. This coming Sunday, actually, we're all getting together at Bledsoe Creek State Park and hanging out for the day. Going to have barbecue and play cornhole and toss football around, that type of thing. So that's important to me. And then for our company, you know, I'm not proselytizing my employees or my customers for that matter, but, you know, I try to be a good example, let them know, because we act with integrity. We, you know, all my employees know that I follow Jesus, and that we want to, the goal is to treat our customers the way we want to be treated, treat our vendors the way we want to be treated. And behind closed doors, we're really angry at our customers sometimes for the decisions they make, and our vendors for what they do to us. But we don't take that to the public space. We say, okay, well, we're still going to treat them with respect. And so I can see that even my employees who don't share my faith realize, okay, that's how we operate in the company.
Right.
We don't lash out. We don't cuss people out. We don't say nasty things, and we don't send ugly emails, and we don't leave bad voicemails. We treat people with respect and treat them the way we want to be treated.
And I've got to think, too, there's a level of, when you talk about being a chaplain, but also a president and CEO of a company, when people see that you're successful, there's a certain amount of trust that they then have to turn to you with questions about their faith, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And whether it's a child who says, kind of like a soccer coach or a mentor, mm-hmm. where they see that, okay, this coach has my best interest at heart. He's trying to help me. Maybe I'm not getting the guidance over here, but he's someone that I can turn to and trust. And they might ask you questions that are things that they're struggling with. I mean, I've got to believe in a way there's a kind of a neat carryover, but obviously a higher responsibility then for yeah. you to kind of set that stage, but also to use that platform to be able to mentor and guide in all the right ways.
Yeah, and I know that some of my employees are probably going to hear this, so I don't want to give away any information
would
betray confidences, but I have had some employees in the past who went through some pretty difficult times personally. With relationships, and you know, to whatever degree I was able to help, I was able to sit down and talk with them, find out what we can do to help them out, give them the space that they needed, the time that they needed to go through that, make some recommendations, and so I know that it is making a difference. To whatever degree it makes a difference, I don't know, and I guess I will never know, but it really doesn't matter. But I do pray for all of my employees almost every single day by name. So, you know, when we hire a new one, I put them on the list and I pray for that person, because I really want them to be fulfilled, to do their job well, to enjoy their job. And I want our customers to be served well.
I love that. How do you, obviously work-life balance is a tough one, but how do you personally try to balance those things out?
Well, I'll give you a real story. So my director of sales he came from a large corporation, you know, multi-billion-dollar corporation, and he came to work for us. And at the time, I think we had 5 employees. So it's a huge shift for him. And so he went on his first vacation with, you know, being an employee of our company, I don't know how many years ago it was, but I told him, when you leave on this vacation, do not take your laptop, do not answer your phones, you know, you're off. And he couldn't believe that I told him to do it, and he didn't want to do it, but he did. And when he came back, he said, that was the best vacation I've ever had. I didn't
nice.
Have to look at my emails. And so what I tell my employees, and I tell them, I said, look, I turned off email notifications on my phone several years ago, and I encourage all of them to do the same thing. When you go home, you're home. Don't answer phones. Don't answer emails. Don't work from home. And if you happen to have to send an email from home, you better put a send later date on it so that it doesn't show that you sent it at 2 a.m. You know, it needs to show that you sent it during business hours. And so I try to really protect that time. So when they're off, they're off. Like I was out last week. I just moved into a new home, and I was off. And they, you know, my employees didn't bother me because they know, well, when they're off, I don't bother them. So I really make sure that's protected. And I make sure they know that, look, if the boss is not going to answer his phone on his vacation, well, I don't have to answer my phone on my vacation.
Right.
So we really
Good
make
for
sure
you.
That happens.
I can't say that I follow that. Andrew's definitely laughing.
You've got to turn your email notifications off on your phone. Life is so much better.
Nice.
So much better.
That's like the tip of the day right there. Mm-hmm. to regain your sanity, your work-life balance. What puts a smile on your face when you talk about the success that you're having with your company, but being able to make a difference in their lives? What motivates you? What puts a smile on your face? What inspires you at this point?
Well, obviously, my wife and kids. I've been married to be 23 years next month, and my kids are. I've got a 17-year-old son and a 15-year-old daughter, and being able to provide for them in the way that they get to do the things they want to do, I really love that. My wife, when I went from ministry into teaching, my wife had to go, you know, get a job, and she was fine with that. She wanted to do it, but you know, as a teacher, we couldn't afford a single income. I couldn't afford that. Well, today we can afford that, and she gets to, you know, get involved in the things she wants to get involved with that are either volunteer based or just, you know, leisure that she gets to do that otherwise she wouldn't have gotten to do. And so I'm very happy that I get to provide that for her. My kids are getting to do things that they, you know, might not have got to do because if I'd have stayed in teaching or even ministry for that matter. You know, so the financial blessings that come with owning a successful business has bled over into my family's getting to enjoy things that they wouldn't otherwise. So that's a good motivator. And then the other thing too is just going back to the employees, looking at my team members and finding out what they're able to do. And you know, I had a couple of employees here recently that showed up with new, not brand new cars, but showed up in the parking lot with new cars, and they were very happy with it, and I'm thinking, man, this is really cool.
Right.
They got to buy a new car, and you know, and so it's awesome.
Did they let you test drive at all?
No, I don't ask. I don't ask. I'm not sure I'd let them drive mine. That's just great. And then besides just the immediate, you know, my employees and my family, what we're able to do for our customers also is a motivator, because we're simply in the business of saving our customers money, period. Because they've got more important things to spend their money on than electric bills. So if we can show them, hey, you're trying to do X, well, all that money to do X is in the ceiling. We can figure out how to change your light system so that you can save X number of dollars to pay for this other thing that you want to do. And so when customers see that and they're like, wow, I didn't know I could do that, that's also pretty cool.
What advice would you give? I mean, obviously your journey to getting this company started is a neat story, but what advice would you give young entrepreneurs or just entrepreneurs that do have a dream, that are trying to, you know, work a full-time job and make ends meet, but have this idea over here and they want to launch a company? What advice do you give them?
Well, I think there's maybe two or three or four pieces of information I'd get. First is I was lucky to have good mentors early on. You know, Mike, who's my business partner now and our senior vice president, is not daily active in the business, but I can lean on him 24/7, you know, and he comes, he was in the office today before I came here and we talked about some stuff, and he comes to all of our team meetings. Having someone like him that I can ask questions to, you got to have a mentor. And Mike was free, right? I mean, he was my business partner early on, so I didn't have to pay him, not directly, to be a part of that. So get a mentor, somebody that you can rely on. Look to other business leaders that are successful, and just, you know, go ask them. Can I buy you a cup of coffee and just ask you about some things? Could I meet with you once a month and just, you know, get some advice on this? And then be able to serve them back. Don't just take from them, but be able to serve them back. But more specifically, I guess more professionally, hire a business coach as early as you possibly can, even if you don't think you can afford it. Because the business coach, if you hire the right one who knows what he or she is doing, they are going to strategically help you plan in ways that you would never imagine. They can see things you can't see. Because we get myopic in starting a business. Our idea is awesome, it's our baby, and it's not ugly. Well, the business coach will tell you, well, your baby's kind of ugly, you need to fix it. Like, this is how you fix it. You can't fix real babies, but you can fix businesses, and you can make them prettier. Hire a business coach, and then the third piece would be, you've got to get your finances correct day one. Do not skimp on that. You've got to, you know, get QuickBooks or something, or hire a bookkeeper. You cannot be willy-nilly with your finances.
Right.
I remember the first time I got we had a very good year and I got my tax bill and I did not plan for it. And my tax bill, that particular tax bill, was more than I used to make as a teacher. And I didn't have the money saved because I didn't know. Nobody had told me. I mean, I didn't ask the questions either. And now I'm not ignorant to think that I didn't owe Uncle Sam something, but I didn't plan enough for this. And for the, you know, next 6 to 8 weeks, I was on, you know, I jokingly refer to suicide watch. I was not suicidal. That's not joking, but matter. But I was really down in the dumps and depressed on how am I going to figure this out? Now, luckily, it all worked out. It was able to work out. But now I look back and thought, man, if I could have started this thing all over, let's get a business coach. Let's get somebody, a bookkeeper, a finance person that can actually pay attention to my books. Those are things that you really, really, really need to do at the beginning.
Well, and to your point, it's not just the business finances, it's the personal finances. Mm-hmm. And on both sides, people underestimate sometimes that, okay, I've got to, on both sides of the equation, I've got to have things in order.
Yep, exactly.
Well, let's switch over. This is kind of our fun way to end these, but it's a lightning round. It's a short questions, short answers, just fun, random, whatever comes off the top of my head. So let's start with, what's a recent book you've read?
My goodness, I read so many books. I don't know which one to tell you. This year has been my year of reading financial books. So I've read The Millionaire Next Door, Rich Dad Poor Dad, and several other books I can't remember the name of on real estate investment, because that's something I'm interested in and I want to get into.
Nice. What's a recent movie? Normally, this is where we figure out what the kids and the ages. Yours are a little older, so you probably aren't watching like Paw Patrol and things like that.
No.
But recent movie or TV show?
Wow, I don't watch a lot of movies. I did, we just moved. So there was one day when I had enough of unpacking boxes and I just got the TV hooked up long enough to sit down and just relax. And it just so happened that Guardians of the Galaxy was it two?
Two,
the
I think
one.
Is right.
That was on, and then The Martian came on right after it. It was on FX or
is
something.
Is the two one with the baby Groot? Is that the
yes,
little cute guy?
Yeah. So I watched those two, but I'm not a big movie buff. It just happened to be on because I was tired of unpacking boxes.
Right. They have to have some mental break. So what's a vacation spot that you and your family like to go to?
We go camping. We have an RV. We absolutely love to camp. We're going camping this weekend.
Nice. Are you a stay up late, wake up early? Where do you fall in that equation?
I'm probably a night owl. I don't like getting up early, but the morning is my favorite time of the day once I'm up.
Do you have a certain routine, or is it just when the alarm clock hits and you just try to power through it?
No, I wear a Fitbit to bed, and the Fitbit wakes me up with a silent alarm, and I get up and get myself completely ready and dressed, and then I go make coffee and sit in my sunroom and watch the sunrise, and I read, and I do my, you know, pray for my employees and the other things that I have to pray for, and then go walk the dog and then head to work.
Nice. What do you do to relax?
I ride a Harley. Love to ride my Harley. Of course, it's been so cold lately. I haven't been able to ride in a while. I like to read a lot. And we just bought a small farm, so I'm looking forward to getting out and relaxing out on the farm.
For those that are listening all over the world that want to come to Nashville and visit, where do you recommend that they should go? Give us some places to eat, and even for myself, like where do we need to go?
Well, I just had one of our vendor partners that we work with. He's from California. He's in town this week for a trade show at Opryland. So since he was at Opryland, we just went down and went to a restaurant in the Opryland Hotel. He walked around the hotel, and so that's just a really, really great thing. And at Christmas time, it's really, really beautiful there. Downtown, I mean, I'm not much into the honky-tonk scene, but that's a great thing to do. You got to go do it. You know, walk down there and see all the bachelorette parties walking around. This is the bachelorette and bachelor party.
I think it's like the new capital
of the world.
Right.
So, I mean, they're all down there being crazy, but you got to go down there and do it. Lower Broadway, Second Avenue, that's really great. Live music venues are really amazing. We have lots of really cool live music venues, and we like to do live music, but I like to go to the smaller ones, you know, where, you know, you just go and sit and listen. There are maybe 100 people in there listening rather than the amphitheaters and Bridgestone. I'm not really into that.
So what's your style of music? Do you have a certain style or preference or genre? Or?
I like folk music. Amos Lee is my number one. I've been listening to him for years, and we've seen him every time he comes to Nashville. He's actually coming to Franklin for the pilgrimage. Sometime, when is that? It's coming up soon.
It's coming up soon, yeah.
I've got notification that he's coming, so I like him. And I'm also Chris Stapleton fan. I play music too, so I like to play anything that I can play. I like that kind of music.
So guitar, yeah, banjo,
guitar, yeah.
Taylor Gibson,
Taylor,
nice.
All got right. A 12 string and a 6 string.
Wow, nice. I like it. Okay, good. See, I learned so much. All right, so as we kind of wrap up, one, tell listeners where they can learn more about your company, social media, website. Where do you direct us?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, and of course, our company is on LinkedIn as well. You can go to our website. It's energylightingservices.com. We have a pretty good website. We have lots of videos. We like to do videos of project interviews after the fact. We video our projects before and after. We do this week in lighting videos, although I've been so busy, I haven't been able to shoot any of those lately. But we like to give a lot of information out by video, so our website's pretty robust.
And then what do you hope when you look at, obviously you're creating it every single day, but you know, years from now, what do you hope your legacy is? What do you hope people say about you and your efforts and the work that you're doing?
I just want people to know that I love my family and that I follow Jesus. And beyond that, I don't care what else happens.
Well, Jason Duncan, greatly appreciate all you're doing. Appreciate you being a change maker and coming on the Change Makers podcast. So thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to the Change Makers podcast, produced by City Current and powered by Lipscomb and Pitts Insurance. To learn more about our guests and to share your stories of others leading by example, visit us online at citycurrent.com. Connect with us online using @CityCurrent or follow the conversation using the hashtag ChangeMakers. Now, think big, start small, and act now. Be a change maker.